Hello and welcome to another episode of Warm Blanket, the podcast where we embark on a journey to see what makes us feel good about Star Trek, where is our love comes from, and what it means for us. In short, what is our warm blanket? My name is Gary, I'm your host, and I'm very honored to welcome here Ellie, aka the 24-year-old Trekkie, at least at this time of the recording, because she will be turning at 25 and 26 and so on. She is a talented and amazing cosplayer, a host of the Towel Talk Tuesday on Twitter, and an extremely kind person who grown to be one of the most positive and uplifting member of the Star Trek community. Let's give a warm welcome to Ellie.
Oh, thank you. I'm like already feeling that warm blanket.
Come on.
Oh, I'm so glad to be on. It's really exciting. I've kind of been away from the podcasting world for a little bit, so it's nice to jump back in.
No, it's really good to have you on. I've been following you a few years now, I think a few years, one or two years for sure, and always excited to see your Towel Tech Tuesday, how that came by. What was the main inspiration to do like Towel Talk Tuesday and talk about Trek potentially?
That's a great question. Honestly, it's funny because I think back and I'm like, where did that idea come from? But honestly, it was because I wanted to project a more genuine image of myself on social media. I know sometimes it can be hard when you interact with other people and you don't actually get to see them every day, or you're not actually face to face with them, to be able to show them who you really are. I try my best to stay like true to myself when I'm posting, but I think that being able to do a video where I have no makeup, my hair is crazy, I have a towel on my head, I just got out of the shower. It's kind of those like unfiltered thoughts where you're just kind of saying what's on your mind. And I thought that was something that I wanted to show. Well, yeah, it's great because I can type up these tweets and sound so eloquent, but I can also talk with you guys for an hour and have no idea what I'm saying. So.
But it's awesome. It became such a staple now. I mean, everyone is... So for people I know and tune on your Towel Talk Tuesday. So many keys in there.
It's a mouthful. I know, it's a mouthful.
So really, people love that. And you know, I love the interaction as well, to see how many engagement you get. So it's an awesome thing, and I hope you keep gonna do that, because that's really an awesome way to, you know, channel positivity out of the franchise. So let's just get this out of the way. This is something that I wanted to ask you ever since I know that we will be making this podcast. Now that you watch Picard, how does it feel living like in the future home of the Daystrom Institute?
Oh, I can tell you. So I originally watched the premiere of Picard with a bunch of friends that had never seen it before. They knew nothing really about Star Trek, and so I dragged them to my house and I said, all right, you're going to sit down and watch this premiere with me. And when that line dropped about the Daystrom Institute here in Okinawa, obviously all my friends here also live in Okinawa, so we were like screaming, we were so excited, we were like, oh my gosh, it's actually like a name drop in Okinawa. And I've been meaning to kind of walk around the island more. I mean, I can't really right now with the whole coronavirus stuff going on, but when we are allowed to go out more often, I was planning on going and taking some more pictures and being like, Daystrom Institute officer's log, went to this sunset beach today, you can see Daystrom Institute from over the cliff, stuff like that. So we'll see if that happens. But I've been searching, I can tell you, I've been searching around here in 2020, and I have not yet found the Daystrom Institute, but I can keep searching. Maybe it's not been built yet, but I'm gonna keep my eyes open.
Oh, no, that's awesome. We will look forward to that. And just out of curiosity, you mentioned friends and, you know, doing Star Trek in Okinawa. How was it? What's the fandom like in that part of the globe?
That's a great question. So almost, it was about a month after I got here, they have a small Comic-Con here. It's called the Okinawa Comic-Con, and it's hosted by the military base here. And it was obviously different than what I'm used to coming from Southern California. I was going to San Diego Comic-Con, WonderCon, stuff like that, obviously larger events. But while the Okinawa Comic-Con didn't have, I guess, like more high staple names of people that attended, and it certainly didn't have as many people, it still was fun in a way that I was able to wear my Star Trek uniform and people still knew what I was. There were a few Japanese locals that looked at me a little funny because I think they hadn't connected the dots quite, where they're like, I recognize the uniform, but I don't know where it's from. But I'm working hard to try to get Star Trek to be more of a staple here. I would say Star Wars is more popular. I also like Star Wars. No shame. I know that there's the big battle between the fandoms, but
not in this house.
But
this podcast, everyone is welcome.
yeah, of course. But I've been trying to. Few months ago, I did an event out in town. They have what's called a Nerd Night, where they people come together and talk about science topics, and it's the money raised goes to research grants for scientists here in Okinawa. And they also allow people to come in and talk about like some nerdy things. So I pitched a Star Trek talk for it, and I got chosen, and I did that in February. And a lot of people in the room, the first question I asked them was, who has seen it and who hasn't? And it was about equal. It was half and half. So it was good to see, but also good to know that there's lots of people that can get into Star Trek here, or at least try to.
That's always awesome. You meet people they never knew Star Trek, and like, oh, there's a lot of opportunity to actually spread the word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so fun when you actually get someone, like I've had a few friends that had no idea what Star Trek was. And then one of my friends, I got him watching Discovery with me, and he would come over every week when it was premiering, and we would watch it together. And now he's gone back through and watched the entire like franchise, and he loves Wow. it. And I'm like, ooh, plus one to the Star Trek fandom.
that's always an amazing thing. I have to be honest, I never had this kind of friendship before, or even just a random person who I turn into like a Trekkie. Not that I really want to, you know, force everyone to be a Trekkie, but sparking that interest is always interesting to witness and experience, which I never had, but maybe one day.
Yeah, no, you got time. There's lots of time, and there's lots of Star Trek for people to enjoy. So
that's very true. Yeah, that's very true. So when did you realize you have the resemblance for Roll Aaron and number one?
My probably two favorite Star Trek characters, Ro obviously being my favorite. If anyone has followed me on social media, literally half the things I talk about is her. So I actually once went, the very first con that I went to in 2014, it was Wizard World Chicago was my very first convention. And I had a TNG jumpsuit, but I hadn't kind of come up with the idea to cosplay as Ro yet. And I went just in the jumpsuit, not as anyone in particular, just like, oh, I'm part of the TNG crew. And I went, and someone at the convention said, you look just like Ro Laren. You should try to cosplay as her. Get the nose ridges and the earring, and it would be perfect. And so, like, I cut my hair and I made a little prosthetic for the nose, and there I went. But I had also obviously been attracted to her as a character. She, before I even cosplayed as her, she was one of my favorite Star Trek characters. So, number one, obviously, now that we got to see more of her, super happy about that. I'll drop a thing for anyone that hasn't already seen it, but I did get a Discovery Season 2 number one outfit I have not done any cosplay shoots in yet, but I am working on it, so that'll be exciting.
that's awesome. We look forward to that. I mean, everyone, and I looked at it the other day as well, like, your role is fantastic, for sure. Number one is amazing, the classic one, and we look forward to see. Have you ever met Michelle Forbes or Rebecca Romijn?
No, I wish. I actually, I believe it was last year, last November, the Destination Star Trek in Birmingham was, Michelle Forbes was supposed to be there. She doesn't often come to conventions, so it was like a big deal that she was going to be there. And I had a friend that had reached out to me and asked, you know, do you want her autograph? I already have one of her autographs here, but do you want like one personalized to you? And I put together a little collage of like some of my cosplay, and I was gonna have her sign it. And she ended up having to withdraw from the convention at the last minute. So Michelle ended up not going, but I was bummed. But next time I see that she's going to be at a convention, when conventions start back up again, I'm going to be booking my plane ticket right away.
You know, there's a small, smallish Comic-Con in Edinburgh as well, in once a year or twice a year. So if ever she comes in, you can count on me. I'll try to get her, or maybe you can come over as well.
Yeah, that'd be exciting. Actually, it's easier now that I'm in Japan to be able to have access to some of these European conventions. Before being on the West Coast, it was a little bit of like a pricey flight, and now that I'm in Japan, it's a little bit more accessible. So hopefully, I'll be able to manage.
No, that would be awesome. So going into the basics and going back to the basics of your, how did you get into Star Trek? How did you get into Star Trek? And who was your biggest influence for the show?
I have said this many times, and I am always just as thrilled to say it. I am a Star Trek fan because of my parents, and I cannot thank them enough for exposing me to the show. And it's really been a companion in my life as long as I can remember. I know for a fact that I had been watching TNG reruns before I could even have solid memories of it. But my very first solid Star Trek memory was sitting down every week to watch Enterprise with my parents, and that would have been, I would have been about 5 or 6 years old, somewhere around that age. No. So we would sit down and eat dinner and watch a Star Trek episode, and that was kind of the thing my family all did together. And so even today, now that I'm 24 and my parents are, not as young as they used to be, but and I'm also not living at home anymore, but we still, when Picard was premiering, when Discovery was premiering, we would call each other every week, and my parents and I would talk about the episode and what we thought about it. And when I was home this summer, before I moved here to Japan, I had some time to be in Wisconsin, my home state, and we would sit down while I was staying at home with my parents for about a month. We would sit down almost every day, and on MeTV, we would watch Star Trek, hashtag All Star Trek for the All Star Trek crew out there, almost every night. And so it's something that I always talk to them about. Most of my Star Trek opinions are also synonymous with my parents' Star Trek opinions. Some of them aren't. They don't think Ro is a great character, and I will always be salty at them for that.
So what did you think about your cosplay idea then, when you started cosplaying Ro at the end?
Oh, yeah. They actually have always been very supportive of my whole Star Trek journey. I was originally more of just a person that would just really enjoy watching the show, and then I decided, hey, maybe I should branch out, because this is something I'm really passionate about. I don't just want to, just watch it anymore. I want to talk to other people about it. I want to dress up as my favorite characters. I want to write blogs about it, do strange videos with towels on my head, all that stuff. They have always been more than supportive. And every time I show them a new costume, they're like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. They always share my stuff on Facebook, and I can't thank them enough. They think I'm a little bit crazy, but in a good way.
I guess that's always the same. I mean, I remember my parents didn't really think that. For me, it was a tiny bit difficult because unlike you, my parents didn't really see the point of watching Star Trek. Like, oh, you're watching this show again? Like, well, I like it. Like all right then, But they never really been super supportive. But I couldn't stop, and I kept going and collecting things, and I remember I think the second or third big model that I bought, and I brought it home, and my father was like, so I was showing off, so I was so excited, oh, look at this, this is the Defiant, from DS9. I was like, oh, that's so amazing. It's like, looks like the other two. What? It was so crazy. But but this time I think they got there that my parents they started watching because I had them all in DVD back home, so I left it home as well. So they started watching Enterprise, which my mom actually quite likes, and I think they started with Voyager, but my mom doesn't like Janeway. So
oh no. Everyone's got their own Star Trek characters that they like, so
Yeah, no, of course, and they're more like a Stargate fan anyway. So back in the house,
which is the same boat. Multi fandom.
No, absolutely, and I think that's the beauty of it. Like, you can connect the threads from different franchises together. That what you like, and you don't have to, as we talked about at the beginning, you just touched it. You know, if you like both or you like all of them, that's totally fine. So, Ellie, that's your name, and we all know you as by year you're always a year older, 22, 24, 23, 25 year old Trekkie soon, and. What is the T stands for in your hashtag, in your Twitter branding, essentially? What is T-Trekkie?
Oh, like the T-Trekkie? Yeah. Actually, originally I wanted to be the person on Twitter who had the handle Trekkie. But of course, as I came to Twitter kind of late in the game, I wasn't allowed to do social media for a long time. You know, my parents were kind of... I mean, in a way, they're trying to protect me from it, too. And when I was younger, you know, all the cyberbullying stuff. But when I first got into doing this stuff on Twitter and wanted to make my own handle for just like something specifically Star Trek, I was like, okay, I'm going to get the Trekkie handle. And of course, I typed it in and it said, this handle has already been taken. And so I was, okay, what's something that's catchy and that also is related to something having to do with me? I think something about, I guess what people approach me a lot about with in regards to Star Trek is they're fascinated that I'm so young and so fascinated with the series. I now know many Trekkies younger than me, so shout out to all those young Trekkies. But the T essentially stands for, at that point, I started off as the teenage Trekkie. That's what my it wasn't the whole handle, but you know, just like the actual like profile name was teenage Trekkie. I was 19 when I started this whole thing. And then it became the 20-year-old Trekkie, and then obviously it progressed from year to year. And so I wanted to do like teenage Trekkie. And then I figured, well, I'm going to be 20 for a while. Like, I'll be in my 20s. So then that will last through my 20s and my 30s. When I turn 40, I don't know what I'm going to do. I might have to change it. We'll see what happens.
That's not so teen Trekkie.
not 30 anymore, Trekkie. Not teenage Trekkie. I don't know. I don't know. But it's funny because... I didn't automatically think I was going to change it every year. I was going to do 20-something Trekkie and then not change it every year. And then I came up with the idea of, oh, well, every year, then it can be kind of like a fun thing leading up to the changeover for this next year's, you know, this next year will be 25-year-old Trekkie. And then my birthday's in September, so, oh, well, the beginning of September up until the day that I turn 25, then I can do something like some cool videos or... maybe have some people on a Skype chat, stuff like that, and it's kind of just become a fun tradition every year.
So you mentioned September. Is your birthday close to Star Trek birthday, or do you share a special occasion?
It's the mine's the 15th.
You shared a special month.
15th. Yeah, the month, but my birthday's on the 15th, so not quite, but. That would be like the ultimate amazing thing is if it would be the Star Trek birthday.
Like Destiny goals to celebrate again.
Yeah, pretty much.
So you mentioned at the beginning that you haven't been sitting in front of the chair in terms of podcasting, but I did notice in your Twitter handle that you kind of the host of a Who is Trek podcast, which I tried to dig up, but I couldn't find anything.
Yes.
If this is something that you don't want me, I can cut it out at the end.
Oh, no.
But I'm just wondering, is this still a project that's in development, or is it actually available? Okay.
It's currently in development. So I have been working with the Trek Geeks Network. If any of you guys know Trek Geeks, I have been working with my dear friend Shashank Avaru from Polytrex. If you guys have ever heard Polytrex, if you haven't, it's an awesome show. Barry DeForge, Shashank Avaru talk about politics and Star Trek. Polytrex. Yeah. But I've known Shashank for quite a while now, and he's been meaning to team up with me on this project, and he's been very patient. My life has been kind of all over the place lately. I was living in California, and then I was in Wisconsin, and then I was in Japan, and when you're a military spouse, sometimes things get crazy, and you don't always know what happens next. So because of certain life issues, I have had to set the podcast on hold for a little bit. I am not quite sure when that will change. Obviously, with this whole coronavirus situation, it makes things a little bit tricky. I'm still currently working, so I don't get a lot of time off to be able to podcast all day. That'd be the dream, podcasting all day, right?
Yeah.
But yes, the project is still in development. Shashank's been great, waiting around for me. But it's a deep dive character exploration of Star Trek, and we're really, really excited. We already have been working on plans of characters and how we want to involve everyone else in the fandom, about how you guys can contribute to the show, and just been really one of the best experiences working with Trek geeks. I can't talk about them enough. Bill Smith and Dan Davidson, two of the best Trekkies I think you'll ever meet. And then obviously fan sets, too. Fan sets pins, if any of you guys know fan sets. They're the Trek Geeks official sponsor. So I got to add a lot to my pin collection.
Is it something that I have to keep in secret or?
No. I've been, we've launched, there is a Who is Trek Twitter page as well as Instagram. There's not that much on it yet because we don't currently have a show like out there to market quite yet, but both of the handles exist, so you can follow them. So when it does, we do like launch it, you can follow. It's at Who is Trek, like the at symbol and Who is Trek on Twitter, and then Instagram is at Who is Trek Pod. Yes, I believe that's correct. But yeah, it's podcasting is something I really didn't think I would ever get into, and now it's something I love so much. So it's been a little weird not being in front of the microphone, that I had gotten used to it for a while when I was with Tricorder Transmissions. So looking forward to getting back to that.
No, it's certainly an interesting experience. Just my opinion, from my perspective as well, when I started this show a couple of weeks back, I was afraid that I'd never imagined that I'm going to do a podcast. But when I started doing this, the level of excitement and the emotions that sometimes goes into an episode, it's just awesome. I'm like opened a whole new world for me, which. From your perspective, I'm pretty sure you have done many of them in the before, and we look forward to see you and see you back behind the chair.
Thanks.
Behind the microphone, not behind the chair.
Yeah, well, I'm sitting in a chair too. I mean, I guess I could podcast standing up. I don't know.
this is awkward. I work too much. Probably that's one of the reasons I'm a bit tired sometimes. But nevertheless, so aside from podcasting, you have a small YouTube channel as well.
Yes, I do.
Tell me a little bit about it.
I have been furiously trying to brainstorm content for YouTube. I know. I guess I will say out there that there are some very negative Star Trek YouTube content creators. I'm not going to name names. I'm not going to call out accounts or anything, but it came to my attention that it was really causing some people in the fandom to be distraught about it, about these content creators. And I don't know that it's necessarily my job to combat that, but I think that I would like to be able to share my voice in a different type of way. And YouTube, I guess, is that different type of way. So I'm not saying that my choice was, oh, well, I need to be the superhero that saves the Star Trek YouTube, because I don't think of it like that. But I think that sometimes in a sea of negative voices, a positive voice can make all the difference. So I'm hoping to be able to add more to that. I'm getting a little bit better acquainted with video editing and different styles, and coming up with cool video ideas. I only have a few out there right now. I've been trying to upload all the Tal Talk Tuesday videos, going back through my archive on my phone, because if you've watched the show, Tal Talk Tuesday, I do it on my phone. And some of these are from, you know, 2 years ago, and like going back scrolling and trying to find it. But I'm planning on adding some more things. I did an unboxing video a few weeks ago with my husband. Yep. My husband's yeah. really into figures, like Sideshow figures, Sideshow Hot Toys. Very expensive figures that I don't know that I could have ever imagined myself getting. I talked to my dad about it, and he's like, "You unboxed them? Excuse me? Why are they, like, leave them in the box?" He was freaking out. But I think, you know, if you're going to get a figure, I don't know. Those of you on the podcast can't see it, but in my background right now, there are figures, so.
Yeah, I was just about to point out that there's quite a few of them in there. And there's yeah. a Kirk and Spock peeking out behind your chair as well.
Yes, yes. Those are the two that I unboxed in that video. It was for First Contact Day. So I also have a QMX Picard figure that I have still in its box, but I am planning on taking out. And so maybe that will be the next video. I don't know yet.
Well, you know, I hope you're not the kind of person you think, like, because, you know, there's a few people who's like, oh, you have to keep it in original box because otherwise it loses its value, which kind of true. I mean, you buy a car, you don't use it, but you won't be able to sell it for the same price anyway, even though you didn't use it. You're not really thinking about this when you, like, unbox something like really rare or special edition.
Yeah, I was talking to my husband about this because I, at first, when he started getting into collecting the figures, I was of the same mind where I was like, don't take it out of the box. Like, if you let it sit for like 10 years, that's going to be like worth a ton of money. But it came down to it as like the figures itself are like a type of art. And he and I decided that we'd really like to have that art displayed, not just being able to see a picture of it on the front of the box, but actually being able to set it up. Kind of, my husband does a fun behind me. He sets them up in a certain way, has different shelves for different things. We're planning on getting some new shelving to be able to add more, because that shelf back there is very full and we have more figures to unbox. So, but he's really into it, and he's kind of dragging me into it, and I'm not sad about it. So I'm getting there too, and now I just have to get him into Star Trek. He's getting there. I'm trying.
What do you like collecting in terms of Star Trek?
Honestly, I am not partial to one thing or the other. I think the whole like memorabilia thing is. You can take it in so many different directions. So at first I really was only into collecting like Star Trek related items, like, oh, here's a notebook that has Star Trek stuff on it, or here's a t-shirt that has Star Trek stuff on it. But then as I got more and more into the fandom, I was like, well, I'm okay with spending a little bit more money for something that I would treasure a little bit more. Like, oh, I'm going to get this collection of Star Trek autographs, or I'm going to get these like 80s Star Trek figures. I had a friend that mailed me an Ensign Roe figure, one of the old like ones that's in the box. And he also sent me a Riker figure where his like uniform is ripped and all this fun stuff. But I'm not really one way or the other about it. I think if I'm walking up at a store, or if I'm browsing online and I see something that I think is really fascinating, I'm just going to get it because I think it's cool. But I think now I'm trying to progress more into collecting Star Trek comics. I've been trying to keep up with the IDW's current run of Star Trek comics, but Star Trek has been passed around between different Marvel and DC, different comic book publishers. So I've been kind of trying to look back and trying to say, there's a Starfleet Academy series that was, I don't actually know what year it came out, but I had a close friend at a comic shop that found an issue for me, just one, and he gave it to me, and I was just like, okay, I have to find all of these issues now, and so I have to track down this Starfleet Academy run so I can get the whole perspective of that series of comics.
Wow. I have to be honest, I did not know that Star Trek comics were. I mean, I know that the IDWs are coming out almost every year now because of the new show and obviously with the Kelvin timeline. But I've never been in too much of a comic book fan myself. But it's interesting to know. I think I had like two, one DS9 one and one original series that I flipped through just because of the sake of the pictures, but I never really been into. It's interesting to hear from your perspective. The actual comic book, I never, you know, like Big Bang Theory, I'm pretty sure you've seen them, you watched them at some point, in your life, massive big comic book people, and yeah, and I never really heard Star Trek being a big comic book distribution. More books.
Yeah. Yeah, more like literature. That's also something I've been trying to get into. The hardest part for me is figuring out where to start with all of it, because there's so much Star Trek literature out there. And obviously there's a lot of nonfiction, but there's also a lot of fiction that, you know, adds a little bit more context and storyline to the series and characters that we already, you know and love. But it's very overwhelming sometimes. Sometimes even, I was talking with someone recently about this, one of my friends that's looking to start Star Trek, just the show itself, and he's very overwhelmed because there's so much in the franchise. He's saying, you know, there's so much here, it's very overwhelming. I don't even know where to start and how I'm ever gonna get through all of it. And in regards to Trek books, Trek Book Club, if you have not ever checked out Trek Book Club, I am now, I'm a member of, or I'm a patron of theirs on Patreon, but I've been trying to keep up with the books every month. They have a good wide variety from different, like they pick from different series, and it gives you a little bit of that taste. And then once I get a little bit of a taste, I'll be able to go back and say, oh, well, now I can go through, you know, that Star Trek TOS number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc. I love to read, so and there's a lot out there, and I'm 24, I got time.
So interesting that you mentioned about the you know, if someone wants to get into Star Trek for the first time and have no clue where to start because there's an overwhelming amount of episodes and movies and books and comics and games, whatever, available. What would you say for a person who just like heard that, hey, Discovery and Picard, what is that? Like, do I have to watch something? What would you say what they should start with? To get so much scared of.
Yeah. I honestly have heard this question a lot because I think that I talk about Star Trek so much that my friends just automatically get either not necessarily fascinated with the show, but they're just like, what is this thing that she is constantly talking about and posting about everywhere? And I honestly think that the best way to recommend Star Trek to someone is, first of all, if you know that person well, I think that my answer differs depending on the person. So, for example, my close friend that I mentioned earlier that I started off, he was watching Discovery, and then he went back and watched the rest. He's very much like an action, adventure-oriented type person. So I thought, well, you know, Discovery has a little bit more of that fast-paced Star Trek. Yeah. So I thought maybe that's a good place for him to start. And so that worked out for him. But then there's another person that I know that is very methodical, very wise, very, very much in touch with philosophy. And so I actually recommended that he watch the original series first. And so that's what my other friend started with, and that worked out for him. So I think it's easier to recommend when you know the person and their interests. But honestly, if it was just like some passerby that was like, oh, I want to start Star Trek, I think that as someone who was drawn back into the franchise by the Kelvin Timeline movies, don't hate me. No hate on Kelvin Timeline. No, I don't. I'm just saying sometimes I get blasted so much for that. But
really? Okay, I'm not going into that side.
Yeah. That's a conversation for another day, right? But honestly, I think the Kelvin Timeline is a good crash course in Star Trek. That's my opinion. I'm not saying it's the way it has to be. I think that it gives enough of a taste where you can say, oh, this is something that I might be interested in going back and learning a little bit more about the lore of it all, but is not so overwhelming where you start the first episode and you're saying, you know, I have 200 more episodes here. How on earth am I ever going to finish? Because I think that if you start off feeling overwhelmed or start off saying, you know, I'm going to start watching the show, but I'm never ever going to be done, it's, you've already fulfilled that prophecy for yourself because you're saying, oh, well, I'm already coming into it with a negative attitude. But when you actually can get that spark where you say, oh, well, it's just 3 movies I have to watch, this Kelvin trilogy. So it's what, 6-7 hours, something like that. And then after that, they say, oh, well, that really captured my interest. Now that I have that spark there, I can go back and now I'm interested in finding out more and will be more invested in sitting down and spending a big chunk of time in watching the rest.
No, that's a very good opinion, and that's a very good recommendation. In many ways, I mean, I've been struggling. I was struggling. I stopped struggling now because I kind of gave up a little bit, but in a positive way. Because so with my wife, we decided to sit down and watch Star Trek, and she was asking like, okay, what would be the, see, just to start from, and I kind of messed it up. I was so stressed about how to introduce Star Trek to someone who never really got engaged with the content before, or never really been interested, to how to spark this interest. And I've been struggling a lot, and you know, going through the back catalog, like, oh, shall we start with TNG? Shall we start with DS9? Shall we start with Voyager? And I was like, okay, TOS is too old for today's standards, in a sense, for not hardcore fans, of course. If we go into Next Generation, that still has at least the first season that this TOS kind of taste. DS9 is a bit more down to earth in terms of characters, and it's a bit more relatable, I think, in many ways. And then Voyager, of course, it's a more modern show. It has a beautiful story arc from the very beginning. Not that all the others don't, but then that definitely not Discovery, because that's, if you really want to get the heart of the story, at least it's my opinion, and again, apologies for everyone who's not agreeing with me. And I got into so badly that we started watching Voyager, but then I realized that the technobabble was so much of it just in the first episode that even I got a bit of a headache and started thinking, and I was seeing that she was struggling as well. So at the end, we started watching Star Trek VI. Which was an absolutely fantastic entry too. It was a bit of a mystery, bit of a murder stuff in there. So it was an interesting process to see, like, for a totally non-interested in sci-fi in Star Trek or Star Trek and sci-fi in general, like, that particular movie worked out well without, you know, putting into too much effort.
Yeah,
I'm going on too much now.
No, actually, it's very interesting that you say that, because I had mentioned earlier that I'm working to get my husband into Star Trek. I don't force him to watch it, but I'm slowly, surely trying to spark that interest, which I know is there, because I know if he were to be very invested in watching it, or actually like take the time to sit down and get a little bit more immersed, and because he's seen bits and pieces here and there, but it's hard to form an overall picture from bits and pieces, so he's still not really on that train. And I'm trying to get him on that train, and so I gave him the ability to choose. I explained all the series to him and said, you know, now you know what time period in the Star Trek universe they're set in, whether that's chronologically in how it was made, like when the series was created, or when, like, actually, like, okay, well, TOS or Enterprise was first, and then TOS, and then, you know, chronologically within the universe. And so he chose to watch Enterprise first, which was my, like, first solid, formidable memory of Star Trek growing up. So it's growing on him. I would say that Enterprise takes a little bit to grow on some people, but it's one of my favorite series, obviously for the nostalgia portion of it, because it's something I did with my family, but it's something that I obviously wished we would have gotten a few more seasons of, because he's saying, you know, well, how come, you know, there's 7 seasons of TNG, but there's only, you know, Enterprise doesn't have that many, and I was like, oh man, I wish. I wish.
No, that's very true. So, aside... So basically, we can totally say, I mean, can we say that Enterprise is your favorite for many reasons, or is there any, what was your favorite Star Trek? I know it's a stupid question to ask, and probably quite, you know, just like quite ordinary question to ask as well, but what's your favorite Star Trek?
Actually, my favorite Star Trek for content purposes is Deep Space Nine. My favorite Star Trek for, like, nostalgia purposes is Enterprise. But I would also say that Enterprise is what I've seen the most of. I have seen the series through quite a few more times than some of the others. But Deep Space Nine really does hold my heart for content. It was, for me, so fascinating to see, well, you know, it's this story is a little bit different than the Star Trek that we're used to. It's a little bit darker. It's a little bit not as geared towards exploring new worlds. Not that we don't get to, because we are introduced to a little bit more. You know, we get to see a little bit more of Bajor and the wormhole and the Dominion and the Gamma Quadrant and all that stuff. But I think that Deep Space Nine really was a series that pulled on my heartstrings a lot. And I'm in need of a rewatch of Deep Space Nine. It's been, I want to say, about a year and a half now since I've done a solid rewatch of Deep Space Nine. I'm currently working my way through TNG. I was trying to get through all of it before Picard started, and I could not get there. I was like, it was like a month before, and I was like, I can do it. I can watch all of it in a month, and it didn't happen. And then, you know, I fell off the rails, and now I'm just watching an episode here and there, so...
But DS9 is good. I started rewatching. I started my rewatch, I think, last month. And I'm still in season one. I'm going slowly, like one or two episodes a week, not, you know, going into too much, because I have other things to do as well, just like everyone else. So finding time to watch something in once or twice, but I'm still trying to make an effort to watch at least one episode in the morning when I wake up earlier or something. But yeah, now DS9 is an interesting and such a beautiful series. But all of them is, and for, you know, as you probably remember, I and both of us and many people out there not campaigning but trying to channel the general idea that no matter what Star Trek you love, you love Star Trek, and there's no wrong or bad, there's no good or bad decisions when it comes to like what's your favorite Star Trek, or what's your favorite, who's your favorite captain, or what's your favorite ship, or what's your favorite Enterprise, because like there's one for everyone. Mm-hmm. That's the beauty of it. So with all this Star Trek, when you think about Star Trek, someone shouts it from the very far in the other side of Okinawa, some Star Trek, what is the first thing that comes to your mind?
Oh, just when someone mentions Star Trek? Oh, no,
it's
my
like
God.
Out of the blue, like Star Trek, and it's like, what is the first thing, that first picture?
First thought. So I will mention, this is always something, this is why the thought that I'm going to tell you is why it, Star Trek is my thing. Why Star Trek? I posted a blog post about this about a month ago, I believe. But it's a show that has literally been there as a companion for almost my entire life, or the entire life that I can solidly remember. And there's so many redeemable qualities about it. So Star Trek itself is not just, for me, it's not just a show. And I know for many of us, it's not just a show. It has this like other element that goes deeper into it where, oh, Star Trek for me as me, Allie, right here, taught me to be more confident in myself, taught me that I could be both powerful and sensitive as a woman. Shout out to Captain Janeway right there. But it taught me that just because so obviously, being a Star Trek fan, I wanted so badly to be in Star Trek. I want to be in Starfleet, right? And it taught me that, well, just because maybe I'm not so good at math and science, I'm not. I'm terrible at math and science. I'll precursor that. But it taught me that I can channel my love for it in a different way, where maybe I'm not in a STEM career, but I'm able to still channel Star Trek through being able to talk about it with other people. I work currently in childcare, and man, those kids hear about Star Trek almost every day. I'm trying to start them young. we'll see how that goes. But Star Trek really has been that kind of moral guidance for me that I needed growing up, and that's why I feel like I latched onto it so hard. It, of course, many other science fiction shows like Doctor Who or Stargate or Firefly, or I mean, the list goes on and on, also are very meaningful to me. But I think Star Trek has always kind of been that bright light because it showed me the type of person I wanted to be. I wanted to be, you know, I wanted to be Jadzia Dax, or I wanted to be Deanna Troi, or I wanted to be Ensign Ro, and yes, she's a little fiery, feisty person, but I kind of growing up was a little bit reserved. It's silly saying that now, but growing up I was a little bit reserved and a little bit shy, and Ensign Ro was like all that feisty fire that I needed sometimes, and now I kind of try to be a little bit more open and bold, because she was like, you know, I'm going to say what I think, and this is who I am, and I'm going to own it. And here I am owning my Star Trek. So yeah, I guess that was kind of a long-winded answer for one, the first thought that comes to my mind. But when someone asks me about anything related to Star Trek, my brain immediately goes to like, why is Star Trek important to me? And all those things I just mentioned are literally just the tip of the iceberg of why it is important to me.
So almost it feels like it's interesting that, you know, you mentioned Ro quite a few times during our conversation, and kind of got my mind wondering on the episode Rascals, you know, when Picard and Keiko and Guinan,
they Ro, all get turned into children. Yeah.
Yeah, that was Rascals. Okay. I'm terrible with I'm terrible with titles sometimes. So it was interesting at the end when Ro was you know, drawing, and Guinan came back as you know, she was transformed back to her normal self. Like, basically kind of felt like your Ro and Star Trek is your Guinan, or Guinan is your Star Trek.
That's a really good
in a sense.
Yeah, that's a really good way of approaching it. I also feel that this is something I didn't pick out until I was doing, like I said, I'm doing my TNG rewatch, and the episode name escapes me now, but it's season 4 or 5, I believe. Well, no, Ensign Ro is season 5, the actual premiere episode, so probably would have been late season 5, where the crew loses their memory, and they don't know who they are, and they have to like try to fix the ship and all that stuff. I cannot think of the name of it, and I just watched it. where her and Riker hook up, and it's awkward. But so there's a line when she's on the bridge, when Riker keeps asking her, you know, if she's okay, and she talks about how much she hates not being in control of the situation, because as like Ro always wants to, I mean, even when it's gonna maybe get her in trouble, she always wants to know what's going on and how she feels about it and what her idea of the thing to do is. And as someone who is, I'm literally one of the most indecisive people you will ever meet. when we eventually, because I'm sure someday we will, but eventually when you meet me in person and, you know, we're gonna go grab a cup of coffee somewhere, I will not be able to choose the place. But
That's the same. So if that ever happened, we're gonna have a hard time. Yeah.
But just that even stood out to me, where I'm like, oh, like sometimes I need to be a little bit more like Ro right now. Maybe not so much that I'm gonna defect the Maquis, but sometimes I need to be a little bit more like Ro. She reminds me of that every once in a while.
That's awesome. Ellie, look, this was fantastic. I really enjoyed this conversation. It was really awesome to get to know you more and your fandom, and essentially what is your warm blanket, which I think I can safely say that Star Trek itself is your warm blanket.
That I
correctly.
You are very correct. It is my warm blanket. I honestly, while this whole coronavirus thing has been going on, I find that I've been leaning on Star Trek more and more, because it does give that message of hope and joy and inspiration that is sometimes so hard to see in the world that we're in right now. And so I find myself coming back to it when I kind of need a helping hand. And obviously the Star Trek fandom is also there, which I'm very thankful for. I cannot tell you how amazing being part of the Star Trek family has been. I honestly, like, thinking back now, I can't even imagine my life without it. So and you are a part of that Star Trek family, so thank you for supporting me and obviously having me on the show. It's been really nice to kind of dig into that, you know, this whole Star Trek is my warm blanket, and I will take any opportunity to talk about it.
And I'm going to take your word for it in the future as well, because I would love to welcome you in the show in the future at some point as well. It's been a really honor for me, and I hope for my audience as well. And if anyone wants to get in touch with you, and obviously, if no one knows you at this point, then then that's impossible. But obviously, you're quite active on Twitter. Towel Talk Tuesdays every Tuesdays. And you have a YouTube channel and Facebook, I think. Where else they can connect you if they want to get a piece of sea trekking?
I am available for many different methods. I also have an Instagram, if any of you guys are on Instagram. It's the same handle as I use on Twitter, which is at ttrekkie. I was lucky that no one had taken it on Instagram when I signed up. I also have a website, which is currently, there's not a whole lot on it, but it's kind of been under construction. I've been kind of transferring it over to what my image of what I want it to be is. And so you can check it out. It's ttrekkie.wordpress.com. And if you guys ever feel like chatting, I have an email. So if you're like into like, hey, Star Trek email pen pal, cool, I'm all about that. My email is ttrekkie@gmail.com. I also, through Twitter, have been doing actual written Star Trek pen pals. My hand, I'm a lefty. For any of you guys that are lefties, you get, when you write, you get ink all over like the side of your hand because you write and the ink spreads on it. So I've been having like this never ending ink stain on my hand from writing Star Trek pen pal letters. but what better reason to have an ink stain on my hand? I'm always open. I mean, you can reach out via DM or, you know, tag me in something. I try my hardest to go through all the notifications. Sometimes when there's a lot, I miss a few. I do really try my best. I can be constantly seen scrolling through my Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, trying to connect with everybody. My husband's always like, "Are you doing the Star Trek Twitter stuff again?" And I'm like, "Yep, that's what I'm doing."
Yeah, why do you know that? Like, because your phone is smoking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, pretty much.
Well, Ellie, again, thank you very much for being in the show. It was, as I mentioned many times now, it was an honor, and I really appreciate that you took the time and spent this time with me to, you know, talk about Star Trek, really. It was really, I really enjoyed it, and thank you very much again for being here. For the audience, thank you very much for listening as well. It was another exciting episode of the Warm Blanket podcast, and we'll be back with more soon to find out what's our warm blanket. Live long and prosper. And that was it for this episode. I really hope that you enjoyed it, and rest assured, new episode will be coming out every week where we sit down with a Trekkie to find out what makes us feel good about Star Trek and to discover what is our warm blanket made of. If you really enjoy listening to this podcast, please leave a review on your favorite podcasting app. It would really mean a lot to me. I also would like to give a special shout out to our Patreon supporters, as they really make a big difference on the creation of this podcast. To find out more about how you can support this audio adventure, please visit trekkerprize.com/podcast, where you can also listen to the previous episodes. Thank you again for listening to yet another episode of the Warm Blanket podcast, and I'll see you in the next episode. Live long and prosper.